I thought back to when I was first ordained, and like an airline pilot, you want to get a lot of hours clocked in on the flight deck. And as a newly ordained person, I wanted to get a lot of pulpit time in. But as the bishop's chaplain, that just wasn't going to happen. But on occasion, I would be offered an invitation to preach. And my buddy Tom Callidou, at the time was rector of All Saints in Highland Park, said to me one day when we were having lunch, he said, "Ed, can you find some time to preach?" So I pulled out, I didn't have a calendar because I didn't have a life. I pulled out the bishop's calendar. And I said, "Yeah, how about that Sunday?" And he said, "Great, done deal." So I got home and I started looking at the lessons. And while I won't exactly say what I said to myself, but I realized, oh, it's Trinity Sunday. Nobody in their right mind wants to preach on Trinity Sunday. So I learned that lesson really, really well. And when I got home, I realized that all three bishops had taken the same Sunday off. So go figure. Well, at least Michael didn't take the day off. But it is me that's standing here today and attempting to make some sense out of the parable of the unjust servant. In chapters 15 and 16 of Luke, there are four parables. Two of them we talked about last week, the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin. What follows is the parable of the prodigal son, but in the lectionary, we don't look at that. And then finally today, the parable of the unjust servant. Last week, Father Michael referenced the TV show Breaking Bad. And there are a lot of wonderful quotes from that show, but one of my favorites is, "Cross me and there will be consequences." Cross me and there will be consequences. But you know, it kind of gets us in the mood for today's parable and reminds me of a line from another TV series, "You're fired." You know, there's lots of negative things that can be said about Donald Trump. Just ask any New Yorker. Sure, that Donald is an in-your-face kind of guy, but I would suggest that Mr. Trump is an unlikely role model and has something to teach the church. Well, I'll bet if I didn't get your attention when I stepped into the pulpit that I just got it now. But you know, even Jesus, from time to time, used unscrupulous characters to make the point. Remember the judge who grants justice to the persistent widow just to get her off his back? Or the thief who came in the middle of the night and surprises people to teach them to be ready, because you never know when God is going to show up. Even Jesus from time to time. Yep. Today's puzzling parable is... See, I'm not used to reading from a manuscript. Today's puzzling parable is another example of Jesus using unsavory characters to teach us about the kingdom of God. So, let me tell you a story. There's this rich guy. Well, let's call him Mr. Trump, who's vacationing in his estate on Palm Beach. And he receives a text from an assistant and says, "You know, you better take a look at this because I think it needs immediate attention." And the text read, "Your new finance manager is ripping you off." Well, Trump calls the, well, not really, he doesn't call the airline. He gets his private plane and he heads back to New York and he calls a meeting with the finance manager. And the first words out of the Donald's mouth is, "I hear you've been squandering my money. Nobody messes with Trump's money." Then in true Trump fashion, he points his finger in the manager's face and he says,
"You're fired."
I didn't hear you. He says, "You're fired. But before you go, I want a complete accounting of all that you've done. I want to know who owes me what and when every last bill is due. Everything. Do you hear me? Everything." There is no opportunity for explanation or defense, only a final accounting. There's no sweating through an inquisition. The gig is up and...
fire.
Come on, guys. He knows what he did was wrong and probably thought that with all Trump's money, he wouldn't miss a few hundred thousand dollars here or there. He also knows that Trump is a harsh, cunning, and no-nonsense type of guy. So the manager returns to his office to pack his desk and starts wondering what am I going to do now? What are people going to think of me? Trump's going to ruin me, and I'm never going to get another job. I'm not going to do some type of menial labor, like an immigrant. After all, I'm a Harvard MBA. And I'm certainly not going to beg, because that's beneath me. The manager is really stuck between a rock and a hard place. But in a moment of clarity, he has a brilliantly creative idea. After all, necessity is the seed of invention. He needs a solution, so he invents one. He figures that if he can make friends among Trump's debtors, that they will welcome him in their homes, share their food, maybe offer him shelter, and who knows, maybe even a job. It was a stroke of brilliance. The shrewd manager made his departure an asset rather than a liability. So before he leaves his office, he reduces the debt of one client by a whopping 50% and another by 20%. It was a stroke of brilliance. After all, he made his departure an asset and not a liability. So I think everyone will agree that the debt was reduced. But who takes the hit? Did Trump get ripped off? Maybe. Perhaps the manager was following the law of Moses in Deuteronomy, which says, do not charge your brother interest on money, food, or anything else that may earn interest. Or did the manager simply cut his commission out of the transaction? After all, the manager had a little bit of leeway to make whatever commission he could. Now, I don't know which theory is true, or even if a combination of them is true. I don't know if the creative brilliance of the manager resulted in losing money for the boss or money for the manager in the parable. I don't have a clue. And Jesus didn't seem to find it too important either to divulge the answer. What the parable does reveal is that the dishonest manager is condemned by the master, not for his dishonesty, but for his shrewdness. Jesus is commending the scoundrel, not because he's a scoundrel, but because he acted with intelligence and cleverness. Jesus is saying essentially, look, if a scoundrel can act shrewdly to save his hide, shouldn't the children of light act shrewdly to advance the kingdom of God? Shouldn't believers be just as shrewd as unbelievers? To put it another way, if Donald Trump can act with monetary savvy, shouldn't we, followers of Jesus, act with monetary wisdom as well? I may be grasping a bit here, and you may not agree with my interpretation of the parable, but whatever theory you subscribe to, it's clear that the parable is followed by some moral and practical applications. We can, in fact, learn some things from the master and his manager. So here's my take on the moral implications in the parable. And let's call it what the church can learn from Donald Trump, an unlikely role model. And I think there's three basic principles here. The first one is that success requires investing in people. In his television show, The Apprentice, Trump oversees the work of young apprentices. He watches them, mentors them, and critiques their decisions. He is investing himself in people with a long-term goal that will pay off for him. Investing in them is in his best interest. It is indeed a shrewd strategy. Remember that the master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. Perhaps the best explanation of this parable comes from another statement Jesus made to his disciples in Matthew 10. Be as gentle as doves and as wise or shrewd as serpents. I've heard it said that too many Christians are as wicked as serpents and as dumb as doves. And I think we probably all met a few. Perhaps some Christians are more naive than non-Christians. They don't take advantage of the resources available to them to advance the goals of their church. The wise manager knew he was in trouble, so he immediately began to invest what resources he had in other people who could help him later. Whose money he used is beside the point. The point Jesus is making is the wise use of resources in the investment of people. The Trumps of this world are shrewd in their investments. They work the system to ensure success. You might call it politicking, schmoozing, manipulation, but Jesus called it wisdom. Jesus is not saying to hoard, covet, or pursue worldly wealth with abandon. No, Jesus is telling us to use it to invest in people and advance the kingdom of God while you have it. It's going to be gone someday, and surprise, surprise, we can't take it with us. Use what wealth you have now to invest in other people and to advance the kingdom of God. At the end of the day, shrewd investments in others will lead to success in any kingdom, even God's. Secondly, success in small projects leads to greater responsibility. This is yet another lesson we can learn from Mr. Trump. In The Apprentice, two teams of people are given small tasks to accomplish. Perhaps it's selling ice cream, marketing a new hair product, or promoting a charity. Lots of apprentices hear the words, but someone in the group will demonstrate shrewdness and savvy and is rewarded a position in Trump's empire and a hefty $250,000 a year to start. What is Trump doing? He's following a principle God integrated into humanity a long time ago. The principle is simple. Those who are faithful in small things will be entrusted with big things. If you are faithful with worldly wealth, God will entrust you with things more important. You see, money is a test. It's testing us to see if we will use it to be faithful to God or simply to enlarge our nest eggs. Most of us see our role in the Christian community as rather small. If we look at what we do each week, we don't see big things. Most of us aren't going to christen a ship, write a book, end a war, dine at the White House, or for that matter, be burned at the stake. But there is a good chance that we will offer someone a glass of water, write a note, visit a sick friend, teach Sunday school class, tell a story to a child, go to choir practice, or feed the neighbor's dog. My friends, these are the best applications of Jesus' words. Whoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with very much. And if we can do these little things faithfully, God will enlarge our territory and we'll be called to larger things. And he will empower us to have greater influence for the kingdom of God in our community and in the world. As a church, as a community of caring Christians, this means if we will be faithful in giving, faithful in tithing, then the Lord will increase our territory and empower us to have greater influence in God's kingdom and in our communities. If evil men are willing to invest to train others to go on suicide missions, shouldn't the children of light invest their money to go and make disciples of all nations? Shouldn't we, as children of light, invest our time, our treasure, and our talent in our spiritual home, in our parish, in our ministries, to ensure that we serve Christ today for those who will come tomorrow? And lastly, you are either for me or against me. The last verse of today's gospel reveals one more principle that Jesus teaches that's been co-opted by Mr. Trump. The principle is simple. You're either for me or against me. There is no neutral ground. And in God's kingdom, there is no Switzerland. Remember, no slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. There may be a moderate Republican, and there may be moderate Democrats, but there's no such thing as a moderate Christian. You can't serve God and money. You have to choose one or the other. As the African proverb says, the man who tries to walk down two roads splits his pants. Maybe that'd be in a fortune cookie sooner or later. Friends, you know, at some point, we're all going to face a crisis. It might be a moral crisis when we're tempted to give in to the powerful voices urging us to compromise our faith and our values. It could happen to a child in school, a teenager at a party, an athlete obsessed with being his best. It could happen in the boardroom, keeping a client happy, keeping a secret from a spouse, balancing the checkbook, or paying the bills. In some ways, the crises come every day because the call to discipleship is the same every day. Pick up your cross and follow me, and we are to follow wherever it leads. We are to use whatever wisdom, shrewdness, and resources we have for Christ's sake and for God's glory. Every dollar, every muscle, every brain cell, every breath we take is a gift from God. And when we use them all for Him, we are the shrewd steward who is not going to hear the words, but rather the words that we all long to hear. Yep. Well done, my good and faithful servant. So, my friends, remember, ascension is not a piece of surface of the earth. Ascension is not merely a collection of people. Ascension is an ideal. Ascension is a vision. So I ask you to join me today in serving Christ for all those who will come to know and serve Christ tomorrow. Be a scoundrel, act shrewdly, and advance God's kingdom today while you still have a chance. Let us stand side by side and together hear the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." Well done.